Do the next right thing to make your marriage sing.
All I ever wanted was to be in love with you. When your eyes met mine, I knew that this was really true. All the flowers of spring.
Hello, welcome again to The Music of Marriage.
With Bob and the one and only...
Evie.
See, she's so humble she couldn't even acknowledge herself.
Well, we are continuing, all of us who have made it through the week in one piece, to pursue higher things, I guess. I guess we're all always trying to pursue that. I guess our main focus was pursuing getting our taxes complete last night, mm-hmm. which we thought we did okay and submitted electronically on time, but then there was doubt and fear throughout the night about whether it would be accepted. You have to get that magic word, it was accepted.
Yes.
And therefore, you know, we were up a little bit more than we had hoped to. But everything turned out well. And
we were going to talk about things that tax marriage.
Yeah, taxing situations in marriage.
But we figured that'd be kind of boring, and you wouldn't want to hear any more about taxes.
So we are going to, because of our intense devotion to paying Uncle Sam any penny that we might have laying around, we're going to do a kind of a live... not rerun, really. We're going to do an extension of last week's show, which was The New World Disorder and Your Marriage. You do kind of feel like a lot of things are out of order when you pay taxes, because you're like, what on earth? You know, so what was the depreciation on the left rear tire of the second to the last car you owned? I mean, it almost gets like your head is like, whoa, this, you know, please make it simpler. Make life simpler. But disorder is coming at us in every form. And when we don't feel peace, we often in our mind can trace it to an individual or a situation or relational dynamic. And when we're married, we have a constant reminder and constant challenges to handle situations because of our nature of, you know, selfishness and things like that. The good stuff does come to the surface, though, and we were happy this morning. We woke up and had good news on the tax thing. So last week it was... same as this week. Your marriage is under, we're always under attack, right? We don't want to just be negative, but just more realistic. And what things are we supposed to see? What things are we supposed to be thinking about that are just going right over our heads, or that we are, we're just so caught up in the noise of the busyness of our life. And what's the next thing? You know, I'm hungry. Oh, I got to cook. I got to get to work on time. You know, I got to straighten this problem out with somebody or with my spouse. So these things are always swirling around us, the to-do lists. And I don't know, I wish there was a way we could kind of, I think this has always been a thing. Even when I was little, I remember the grown-ups talking about the rat race, you know, and how do we get out of the rat race? Do you remember that, Daryl? They used that term, the rat race. Mm-hmm. I don't know if anybody ever learned anything.
What I remember is, remember that show Laugh-In in the 70s? And Lily Tomlin was one of the comedians on it. And she said, the problem with the rat race is, even if you win, you're still a rat. Anyway, that's the only thing I remember.
But, you know, we're needing to stop and think and challenge ourselves about the direction that we're going, and, you know, how can we improve our personal dynamic in our marriage, in our relationships, and then outwardly in our culture. And that's not always easy to do when there's a lot of stress upon us and fear, worry. Situations in the world are a little bit interesting more and more lately, and seemingly disorderly. So
chaotic.
Yeah. So we had a lot of information or material last week that we didn't really get to. We thought we would just continue and bring out some of the thoughts that we hadn't gotten to.
Yes, and this new world disorder, as Evelyn coined the phrase, is real. It's something that either directly, well, actually, both directly and subconsciously affects our psyche, our inner peace, our, you know, stress levels, and that affects our relationships and how we treat one another. You know, it's almost like if you lose sleep, you start getting a little snappy, and you say, "Hey, what's wrong? We're all snappy this morning." "Oh, that's right. We watched that movie up till 12 o'clock. We thought we were still kids, but obviously we are not kids." So in the same manner, a lot of the stresses of the world that are coming upon us and our children, and we do want to focus on our children to some degree this morning as well.
Because, and grandchildren.
Yes, because they're not only important, but they're the torch bearers for the next generation, and whatever they ingest, imbibe from this world, this new world disorder that is plaguing us, is what they're going to carry on through the rest of their lives, and what they're going to teach directly or indirectly to their children. And this is how, over time, we get to a point where we are much further from center than we thought we were. And we addressed that a few weeks ago. And we have to get back to center, and that takes discernment, that takes awareness, it takes focus, it takes making decisions that are not only right, but sometimes uncomfortable.
The path of the most resistance is usually the right path.
Right. Yeah, that's right. Not the path of least resistance. And we have been accustomed to less resistance just because we have so much. And we have so many opportunities. We have so many options.
At our fingertips.
Most of the world doesn't have this. And much of the world has to focus on survival only. And, you know, they're very focused. When you have to focus on survival, you get focused real fast. So let's jump right into the basics of the Christian family. And that really starts with marriage, and then it continues with raising children. And I fear that because of much of the education that is very persuasive in a direction that is unhealthy for our children, that our children are going so far left of center, absolutely strident, that pretty soon they'll be questioning their own faith. And that is actually happening and has happened, and we've seen it over the years. I mean, going back decades, we've seen that. Schools teaching children to question their parents and not believe them as the only authority, but that you can come up with your own truth. And if your parents counter that, to tell them, "Well, that's your opinion." These are actually things that they were teaching back in the early 1990s. And it has gotten progressively worse. And we all know a lot of the dramatic things that have developed with identity and all that stuff, and gender, and the removal of distinctions, which we talked about last week. So in Larry Christensen's book, he mentions that the philosophers in biblical times looked on marriage as a gloomy thing with severity, and it was a contradiction to the spiritual nature of man. in the most rigid sect of Jesus' day, saw marriage as a hindrance to the preparation of the kingdom of heaven. But the Christian family is formed to be the very image of the future kingdom of God, in which the will of the Lord shall be done on earth as it is done in heaven. It is not only a school for heaven, in a certain sense, it is the anticipated kingdom of God itself. The Christian family on a small scale should be seen the wisdom and gentleness of command, the willingness of obedience, the unity and firmness of mutual confidence, which will characterize the perfected kingdom of God. In an exact sense, this can be said only of the Christian church. The church is above the family, yet there is no building up of the church without the building up of the family. The Christian family, therefore, does not exist for its own benefit. It is created to bring glory and honor to God. The blessing of man is a derivative, a byproduct. Those who stubbornly hold that their own happiness and convenience are the highest goals of family life will never understand God's plan for marriage and the family, for they do not grasp the underlying structure, the basic starting point.
That was a lot.
Yeah.
Can you maybe go back to a couple of these first points that you just, in the last paragraph or so, and pull out what are those, what are these points in everyday terms that we can think about? How would that apply, you know?
When he says the Christian family on a small scale should be seen the wisdom and gentleness of command.
Should be seeing?
Seen, S-E-E-N.
Oh, okay.
The wisdom and, that's how he worded it, the willingness of obedience, the unity and firmness of mutual confidence.
That's a lot right there.
It is.
Just in itself is a, is an awful lot to get. So what does that mean? Willingness of command. Does that have to do with the father in the home, the leader, the head of the home, so to speak? That.
Well, I think it starts with leadership, headship, and certainly the wife has a position of authority over children. And, yeah, by extension, creates a kind of a unity and a mutual confidence that we're on the right track, we're on the right road, we're doing the right things, we're making necessary preparations for facing the cruel world out there and doing God's will in that world. But more than that, though, what he says here, this will characterize the perfected kingdom of God. So it's,
we're here for a higher purpose than just our existence. And then when your number's up, your number's up. Hopefully, if we look more deeply at the meaning of our life, which he's describing here, is how God sees each of our lives. He's put a lot of purpose into each of our lives. And no matter what our past is, no matter what happened 10 years ago, 30 years ago, 10 hours ago, life is always moving and changing. The currents, like the weather, you know, they always, you run into circumstances that you can never predict. And if you're in a moment where you're thinking, this is awful, this is unbearable, it will never change, or I've blown it, you know, I might as well, I have a black mark on me. Mm-hmm. That's opposite of how God's always moving forward. And even though when he gives these kind of impossible standards that he puts up there, well, it's the only way you're going to hit the moon is to aim for the stars or hit the, you know. We have to have that higher, more elevated, in-depth thinking about, you know, and critical thinking. And that is a thing that is also, I think, being attacked. Because if you think deeply about things, then you're searching for truth. You're searching for what works. That makes you more difficult to control with evil or by evil people who seek to destroy. And so it's really important that we put in some extra effort. And this is a book here. What is the name of it again? The Christian Family by Larry Christen. Not Christian, but Christen, T-E-N-S-O-N.
Yes.
And, you know, you don't have too many books out there that really give clear guidance where you go, oh, okay, that makes sense. I can get on board with that. There's so little guiding us today, so anything we can get go on Amazon and get a book like that.
But I like what he said, that the school is that the home is a school for heaven, and in a certain sense, it is the anticipated kingdom of God itself. So that's how we should view our home. Young folks who have children, young children, and who are either before or at school age, view your family that way. It's a very very cleansing and helpful way to view it, because our culture does not view the family that way at all. And in fact, our culture is anti-family. And so we need to be beacons. We need to be those lights on a hill that shine. The shot that was heard clear around the world. Paul Revere, remember that story there? And yeah, we need to be that. And our children want to be that. But if they're persuaded otherwise in a secular culture, and they don't see that example modeled in their home, they soon lose that desire and change their way of thinking.
I think, too, as we get older and then become grandparents, which happens quite quickly, we never, until the day we die, lose that responsibility to think about, you know, what is my legacy? When my grandkids think of me or remember me or talk about me, you know, will it be things that elevate their spirit and that are exemplary, and not for our own glorification or patting ourselves on the back, but for the sake of their well-being? Are we, when things seem to be veering off into a ditch, or maybe they've gone into a ditch, how gracefully are we handling our lives? Because we will fail. We will not be the perfect model that can look back and say, oh my goodness, you know, I did everything right. We should never say that, because it's never true about any of us. But mm-hmm. Where we do see, oh my goodness, you know, I hope this doesn't have a bad effect on them. You know, and God can turn that around too, and he makes good out of what we have done that isn't so great.
Yeah, if you go on a hike, having a compass is a good thing. And we wrote this in our book about the present is tied to the future. It's an eternal continuum type of thing.
The future being future generations.
Yeah.
And the future of your marriage. Of our life as well.
And yeah. So if you're on a hike and you have a compass, it's a helpful thing. And, you know, it's reliable, and you have the confidence to keep going in the direction you're going despite the obstacles, right? You'll get to your destination. So climbing a mountain or forming the rapids will quickly go from adversity to adventure if your eyes are set on the goal. So that is what the family is all about. That's what raising kids are all about. That's what a Christian marriage is all about. And that's what your own personal life and your walk with God's about. And right now we have a song from Dusty Springfield called You Really Got a Hold on Me, which was a Beatles song. The Beatles made it popular, but I do like Dusty's version here.
Yeah.
We're back with the music of marriage.
And I have a question for you. Surprise question.
Oh, that was quick. Okay.
Yeah. Why did you pick, because you selected that song. What about the content in that song? You know, we do try to pick songs that have some, or we stretch them to relate to what we're talking about because we really like them. But what was it?
I like the line, "You've really got a hold on me." And, you know, I think too many other things in this world have a hold on us besides our spouse and the love that we first had when we married our spouses. When we first got married, I mean, nothing in the world compared, and nothing had a hold on us, but we had a hold on each other, and I just think that's a beautiful thought.
That's good enough.
It was written by Smokey Robinson.
Was? Oh, okay. Our producer Daryl said it was. That song was written by Smokey Robinson. Interesting.
I'm sure he does a great version.
Yes. Okay. Well, anyway, we're back talking about the
New World Disorder and your marriage.
This is the sequel.
And family.
To the first edition.
This is the We Were Up All Night Doing Taxes sequel.
Yes, clearing our throat today. Anyway, Glenn Stanton had a column in the Gospel Coalition called Fact Checker. And what he wrote in that column, what appears intuitive is true. Couples who regularly practice any combination of serious religious behaviors and attitudes, attend church nearly every week, read their Bibles and spiritual materials regularly, pray privately and together, generally take their faith seriously, living not as perfect disciples but serious disciples, enjoy significantly lower divorce rates than mere church members, the general public, and unbelievers. Other data from additional sociologists of family and religion suggest a substantial marital stability divide between those who take their faith seriously and those who do not. And I just thought that was interesting data.
So their faith really has a hold on them.
That's true.
Okay. You know, relationships are what make us different from, you know, machines. I don't think, and I noticed this with the whole AI thing. I call it GI, genuine ignorance sometimes, because trying to do the taxes and you can tell they're, you know, then you call for help, you pay extra for the help, and then it's some AI thing. And no matter how you slice it, you cannot, they can't figure out what you need help with, which is another reason why it takes a long time.
Actually, they need our help to determine what a stop sign is as opposed to what a road is. When you do those little captchas, you know, to prove that you're not a robot.
Click which picture has a motorcycle.
Yes.
And then you miss something. You've missed part of the spoke or something. So then they give you a whole new set and you're going on and on. But in life, relationships, the humanness, the soul part of us, is what distinguishes us from machines and computers. Mm-hmm. And there's something living there that's sourced, outsourced, insourced, downloaded from God, from his being, because he created man in his image, different from the animals, different from inanimate objects like trees. So we all know that. We feel it. We have common feelings and common reactions to things. When we see something happening on the world stage, say someone appears to be really being unfairly persecuted, everybody kind of knows that. You know that. What's right and what's wrong, you know, there's peace when people are pursuing peace, which happens through kindness and fairness and justice, which we've talked about. The laws of our land were based on that. And should be still. I think I heard someone tell me this week that in Louisiana, they made a law to put the Ten Commandments on the walls in the public schools again, which gave me a lot of hope. Mm-hmm. Because if we just wake up and we have nothing to guide us, you know, we're in trouble with our relationships. And our relationships reflect our relationship to God. I believe that if we have a really broken down situation and difficult situation, and the last thing that we often want to do is pray for that person and pray for God to intervene. We just want to get in there and fight back ourselves or retaliate. But when we can break that cycle and change the whole trajectory, you know, it's like you're at a fork in the road, and one of them's going to lead to a better, more unifying result than the other one. So
that reminds me of the fork in the road we reached on our honeymoon. Oh, but what you said also reminded me of something C.S. Lewis said, which I'll say first, about the soul, the inner part of our being. He said, some people say we have a soul. I say, you are a soul. You have a body. I thought that was pretty cool.
And that is how we need to look at things, because we do live eternally. So the body we have is for now.
Because the soul never dies. The body dies. So it's just a temporary housing for our soul.
Which is always in relationship with God, and will be with each other as well. So what was your point about?
Well, when we were going on our honeymoon to Williamsburg, Virginia, we reached a fork in the road, and it's probably an infamous fork around Washington, D.C. And because of that, we took the wrong fork, and we ended up back in the same spot where that fork was 2 hours later, and we said, haven't we been here before? Oh, my goodness. And we missed our dinner at the Williamsburg Inn that was a reservation. So back then, Howard Johnson's was, you know, a big roadside restaurant. And so we had turkey loaf at Howard Johnson's instead of roast turkey and mashed potatoes and stuffing and all that good things. But anyway, we were so in love that it didn't bother us, you know. It didn't really affect us. So what the future holds is often the last thing we think of when love is new. Forks in the road are not issues when love is new, because love is
blind.
It's blind.
Deaf and dumb.
That's a good one. Justice is blind. Love is blind. You know, and that's.
But after a while, love opens its eyes. Yes. And says, wait a minute, we're still going to forks in the road. You're not very good at directions.
But that's why all is fair in love and war. That's a saying we heard. Anyway, but, you know, many of us face turning points in our marriage and in our families with unforeseen challenges. But through all of that, if you are developing and exercising Christian character traits, you can avoid perilous patterns of behavior and destruction. And you'll be better equipped to establish expectations and priorities in your relationship and in your family, and have that sense of unity Larry Christian was talking about.
Well, so, talking about the children, too, and the family and the culture, there was an interesting article. There's a magazine my dad always loves, this called Touchstone. And it had an interesting thought. We don't really talk that much about children and that aspect of family and married life. But obviously our decisions regarding our children are ones that we make as parents, as a married couple. And, you know, you can really be at odds with each other if you differ in how your kids should be educated or where they should be educated, or how do we handle this teenager who's lifestyle now, as they're more independent, is really bringing a lot of upset into our household. Well, you want to be nice. You don't want to turn them off. You don't, you know. And we would find that we would often be at odds with each other and say, this isn't even us that's causing the problem. It's mm-hmm. it's somebody else in the household that is bringing this in, and this is difficult for us. So, we need to think about, you know, in regards to the children in our home, it can be so challenging, but it can be very enriching. And, it's just part of life. We go through these types of challenges. But how we educate them, I hope that, I know that homeschool is growing greatly for obvious reasons. And I know with our two younger of our four, it got to a point in the public school when they were in 9th and 10th grade that I decided this is, you know, they'd be better off just being home, even if, than what they're getting there, because it's really turning them in some wrong directions. So if only we knew some more, and sometimes reading some of these magazines, Touchstone is a good one, helps. There was this statement made that Christian education should be more than just avoiding the evil influence of the secular school. It not only has a critical role to play alongside the church and the home in transmitting the biblical worldview to the next generation, it also, in its higher levels, has a role to play in showing the relevance of the Christian worldview by applying it to all of life. It is not a luxury, it is a necessity if the church is going to fulfill its mission, and if the family is going to fulfill its mission. We must care about the children and their souls and their well-being and what is going in. We have to really guard them, and especially today, things are getting very challenging that way.
Well, we have another song. Evelyn, you picked it by Bread. And why did you pick the song?
Well, I love the music of it. But I was listening to it yesterday, and I thought the words were really beautiful, and the way it's sung kind of makes you want to do something about life, if by Bread.
If a picture paints a thousand words, then why can't I paint you? The words will never show the you I've come to know. If a face could launch a thousand ships,
welcome back to The Music of Marriage with Bob and Evie. We do have podcasts on our website, themusicofmarriage.com. We have also a book, How to Make Your Marriage Sing, there or on Amazon, but there's a link on our website. And right at the top of the website is where we post, you know, new radio, new shows. So, and then we have older ones there too that you can share. Or just listen to whenever you feel like it.
On the More Podcasts button.
The little button Bob designed. He was a graphic designer. He designed the website. And he used to do that for corporate world. Anyway, so there's a button you can click on for more podcasts. You can figure it out, I'm sure. And then we have some songs there to download. But that song, If by Bread, it has a very spiritual quality to me. Well, to me, all music kind of does in one way or another. But that one was very pensive, like introspective sounding, wouldn't you say?
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely.
Wouldn't you say that, Daryl? It's almost like you're in church or something.
It's a masterpiece.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's the beauty of music. It can bring you to a place in your spirit and in your mind that's comforting and encouraging, and it's safe. It's not a person telling you what to do or be. It's music.
You mean like us?
Inspiring you. Well, you know, that spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down. A few minutes of music. The last song we're going to play is kind of prayer-like, too. I say a little prayer for you by Aretha Franklin. I wonder what she thought. I'm guessing when she wrote that, she was motivated because she actually really, really did that. Mm-hmm. And I know that when that came out in high school, I thought, and my girlfriends and all, you know, when I put on my makeup, I say, the first thing in the morning when you get up, you say a little prayer because somebody's really got a hold of you. They're really on your mind. And if, da, 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 da. But, you know, prayer is so important and it's powerful. And I think the best thing to know about prayer is that I don't like to use the word magic, but I can't help but use the word magic. Because I have found that when I go on the path of most resistance, and that is, you know, it's easy to pray for this person, that person, the other person, but when it's somebody that's really hurting you, really been unkind to you, or unfair, unjust, that's very difficult. That's huge resistance. Somehow it unlocks something, you know. You say a little prayer, and it's like, even if you don't feel like it, it's like God has just set up, just like in creation, you know, gravity, you know, this cause and effect world. You do something, something else is going to happen. And that's very comforting to know. And
And God doesn't really need to know what you need. He wants to know what's on your heart.
And you do see things change and improve. And if nothing else, you know that you've got a friend, you know, you've got God on your side, and Aretha must have known that. I don't think she just said, I'll say a little prayer for you for nothing, because in her life, too, we're all human, right? We all know somebody or a situation we have in our love life, our whatever life, with our children, work. So I hope it's encouraging to you to think about that spiritual reality of our life, and that's who we are. We're spirits, and we have, like C.S. Lewis said, we're not a body that we have a soul. We're a soul with a body.
Yeah, and because of that, all of life is spiritual, and if your focus is on the soul and not the body as much, then you will be living in the light of reality, actually, because spiritual things are real, though they're unseen. And the body tends to bring thoughts of self-love, obsession, envy, lust, whatever, a whole list of things. Not that you shouldn't look your best, but like Andy Griffith would tell Opie, go out there and be somebody.
That's right. So I don't know where we're going next with this. I think we've meandered around a little bit, but trying to bring order into a world of disorder. And when you think about it, when you have a situation and you have an opportunity to make a decision, I'm either going to take the path of most resistance, and against everything I feel like doing, I'm going to show love. I'm going to have hope and faith, and I'm going to pray for this situation, for this person. And it's kind of like it moves yourself aside. It moves yourself out of the middle. You're not in there directing the traffic anymore. You're stepping aside and you're letting God direct things. And it can even be the way our world is, political leaders, the ones that we dislike the most, that we feel like are making the most problems. As difficult as it is, we should pray for them that God will somehow change things for the better. So from that level down to our own home life.
Yeah, and, you know, we have a tremendous opportunity to be examples. Have you ever in your neighborhood recognized kids who are well-behaved and say, well, they're well-behaved? And then when you get to know their parents, you understand why they're well-behaved, because their parents are well-behaved and they have a sense of integrity about them. And they taught their children that. So even if you are in a broken marriage or family, you know, you have opportunities to shine like stars in the universe and be examples to the world around you. And we wrote a lot about this in our book, How to Make Your Marriage Sing. And God has given us abundant resources to do this, not just an order to, you know, do the right thing, but just incredible amount of information and spiritual help in this area, and as a community and as a church and things like that, as believers, as we get along with one another and talk about real things that affect everyday life. We have an opportunity to be not only examples, but an inspiration to others. And, I mean, it's a significant thing. I mean, God holds the whole world in his hands, and so he's intimately aware of our joys and struggles and aspirations, and he takes our imperfections into account. So, remember, you don't have to have a perfect marriage or a perfect family. You don't have to be that to have a conflict-free marriage that sings.
That sounds kind of unrealistic to me, conflict-free. Let's put it this way.
No, I meant you don't have to be conflict-free, sorry, to have a marriage that sings. Conflict is all part of the equation. Conflict is a testing ground.
That's why they say for better or worse.
For character. Well, no, we should welcome conflict because it is a chance to grow and do the right thing in a situation that's a little more difficult, out of your comfort zone, let's put it that way, right?
We'll need lots of prayer for that.
Yeah.
Therefore, Aretha, what is this album that she's singing this on? Say a little prayer. It's not the version that I mostly remember, but I like this version. It's a little bit more, I don't know if raw is the word, but the instrumentation is kind of neat.
It's called Aretha Now, the album.
Probably right out of the 60s, it looks like, early 70s. So, keep on praying, keep on looking up, and keep on singing. Say a little prayer. Mm-hmm.